Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I don't even like the song. This is the song of the day. But I just heard it and I can't get it out of my mind.
Oh, you're not a big fan of today's song of the day, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to hear what that is in moments.
Should maybe I switch the song of the day?
Whose name's that on that banner? It doesn't say Dr. Doobie on there, does it? No.
Does not say the doctor.
All right. Your Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, January 14th. It's just moments away. But before we get into this, we need to thank the following unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. Unions like the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. No, Ben, not Aerosmith. Local 126 and District 8. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9. The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, sponsor this program. And, of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, January 14th, is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor.
I learned the truth at 17. I don't like this song. I can't stand the fact that it's in my head.
Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Tuesday, January 14th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, our Chicago Reader colleague, Maya Duke-Masova, will join us. We welcome President of Planned Parenthood Illinois, Jennifer Welch. And it's the return of campaign strategist Lori Glenn with Juanita Irizarry of Friends of the Parks. And now your host. I'd say he's a friend of the park. Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Fall in Line Tuesday, and here's why. Good week. You have a good weekend, D?
Yes.
Well, you caught me off guard. I know you had a Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Oh, my God. I love that thing.
Yeah. I still haven't had one of those things. And plus, you had cookies at Subway.
Okay. Can we not reveal that much, please?
I love those cookies at Subway. I'm so hungry.
Like three for a dollar. How can you turn it down?
I could just see it right in my mind's eye. Anyway, I saw the movie 1917.
Have them warm up the cookies at Subway. Oh, man. That's good right there, huh?
Whoa.
Hey, can you warm these up, please? Thank you.
They can do that?
They have a microwave, right?
God dang, man. How come I didn't think of that? I love Subway, ladies and gentlemen. All right.
That's correct.
Thank you, Robert Mueller. I saw the movie 1917. Excellent flick.
Oh, a movie about the year you were born.
Oh, I walked
sure
into
that
one.
That was a personal one for you.
I remember the truth. I learned the truth at 17. That's 1917. Anyway, good flick. It's a war movie, but here's the thing, D. All right, just follow me on this one. I'm going to tangent with it a tangent. The whole thing about this movie is that it's done in one shot. They don't cut. So in other words, the camera follows the action. And so you know how in a normal movie, like let's say you and I are having this conversation, so the camera would be on you, then they'll cut to another camera that's on me, and then they stitch it together. In this movie, it's just one camera following the action. It's really freaky. I loved it. Anyway, great flick, 1917. I woke on Monday, was ranting and railing all day. I think I did this to you about the outrage of the Oscars. We're going to have an Oscar special segment on it. But Adam Sandler, my beloved Sandman, got totally screwed. Did not get nominated. Eddie Murphy, there's a bias against great comics. Eddie Murphy should have been nominated. J-Lo should have been nominated. The little kid from Jojo Rabbit should have been nominated. The Safdie brothers should. Awkwafina. They all got screwed. Man, too many nominations for Scarlett Johansson. Anyway, but that's not what I want to talk about.
Scarlett Johansson is pretty good.
She's good, but come on. Two nominations? I mean, and the two popes, each actor in the two popes gets nominated? They went out of their way to screw Adam Sandler. Quote me on that one, all right? You can quote me on that one, D.
Poor Adam Sandler. Poor Sandman.
I love the Sandman, okay? And Eddie Murphy for Dolomite. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is the difference between Democrats and Republicans. As we head into this election year, it's important to realize this. I said this once, I'll say it again. Democrats fall in love. Republicans fall in line. Right, D? Democrats now, like, they don't, they got to love a candidate. We know this because we have many Bernie bros walk into the studio. They love Bernie, right? But when you talk about another candidate, like, I'm not quite sure. I'm for Elizabeth. Elizabeth Warren, they'll go into like these minute details about Elizabeth Warren, which why they can't support Elizabeth Warren because they love Bernie so much. And by the way, Elizabeth Warren, people the same way, now they're mad at Bernie about some conversation that may or may not have happened between the two of them in 2018 over whether Bernie said a woman couldn't get elected president or not. So now they're mad forever. They're going to just hold a grudge forever into the, it's sort of like a family that just can't get over something that happened in the year 1917. And at Thanksgiving in 1977, they're still arguing over it. That's how the Democrats go. Meanwhile, Republicans, they get their orders and they fall in line. And to approve this point, I'll tell you the tale of David Richter. And D, you're going to say, who's that? Good question, D. He is Republican candidate for Congress in New Jersey. I read all about this over the weekend in the New York Times. He's running against a Democratic incumbent named Jeff Van Drew. All right. So the Republicans thought they could knock Jeff Van Drew out. This was a district that went for Trump, but it has a Democratic congressman. Everybody lined up behind this Richter character. Everybody loved Richter. Trump was getting ready to endorse Richter, do one of those tweets for Richter, do one of those appearances for Richter, fly into Jersey, do a, you know, have him come on stage. And guess what happened? Jeff Van Drew, no dope, voted against impeachment, then flip. And went from becoming a Democrat to becoming a Republican. Now, Trump's excited. He loves this guy. Can't get enough of Jeff Van Drew. Trump has flip-flopped. Here's a big surprise. Trump was saying one thing one day about David Richter. Now he's saying something completely different. He's going to invite Jeff Van Drew. I think he actually invited Jeff Van Drew to the White House. He's going to fly into Jersey for Van Drew. He's going to send out tweets in favor of Van Drew. All of a sudden, Republicans in New Jersey who were supporting Richter, flip-flop. Now they're for Jeff Van Drew.
Wouldn't it be crazy if his name was Andrew Van Drew? Well, that'd be weird, right?
Whoa. Oh, my God. Man, I could see you've been enjoying the legal cannabis. Anyway, ooh, what was that?
It's a phone.
It reminds me, this moment, I haven't talked about this in a while, D. Do you remember that I've talked about this in the old days? Bewitched, the TV show Bewitched.
Oh,
I talk about this all the time.
Yes, tight millennials.
As we know, the star of Bewitched.
Got a lot of 2020 content coming up today. Don't worry. Well, go ahead, Bewitched.
Bewitched was Darren, and Darren was, well, no, the star was the what was her name?
Samantha, I think.
Very
right?
Good. Samantha, I think. Like he doesn't own the entire complete DVD collection of Bewitched, and he hadn't watched it 20,000 times. I don't know. I think her name is...
My nickname back in the day was Dewitched, because I loved it so much.
That's pretty good.
That's correct.
And now we're going to call you to one... Well, we'll add another nickname to the list. He's no longer Dr. Doobie. He's Dewitched. Anyway, so Samantha was married to Darren, who was in the advertising business, and they would have a client come in. This was a standard satirical bit about the advertising profession. They have a client come in, and Darren would put out the promotional ad they were coming up with, and his boss Larry's first reaction, right, reading the scene, was like, "Oh, I don't like that. Oh, that's not good." And the
you know, we're on the internet, right? 2020.
Yeah.
Internet.
Yeah.
You know, not like, AM radio.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Bewitched talk is perfect for AM radio. You know, the days before you were fired.
Oh yeah, I was fired, wasn't I?
But hey, go ahead, Bewitched.
So anyway, Darren would say, this is my presentation. And Larry, the boss, would say, that's terrible. I hate it. And then the client would go, I like it. At which point, Larry would immediately say, you know what? I like it, too. And that's how Republicans are with Donnie Trump.
Oh, Larry.
They'll say, I love David Richter. Donald Trump will say, no, I'm for Jeff Van Drew. And the Republicans will immediately flip-flop and go, I love Jeff Van Drew. So that is the Republican Party. They fall in line. They do whatever the boss say. Donald Trump says jump. They say how high. Democrats, meanwhile, are like, I don't like him. He's mean. I don't like her. She's mean. I will only vote for him. I won't vote for her. No wonder you lose all the time, Democrats. You always fall in love. Still holding these ancient grudges from the year 1917. Get over it, Democrats. Man, that thing between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. I'm going to be talking about that all day. He said this. I didn't say it. Yes, you did. No, you didn't. There you go. Going into the debate. There you go. Fighting over what Bernie may or may not have said in a conversation that was supposedly off the record in 2018. No wonder Democrats always lose. They just think they're perfect. And if everybody's not perfect just like them, forget it.
I'm not a perfect person.
Except for Governor Pritzker admits he's not perfect. All right, we got a great show today, everybody. Maya Tomasova's coming in, and she's got a few things to say about the whole Bernie Elizabeth thing. I can't wait to hear that. Jennifer Welch will be here from Planned Parenthood. They got a big fundraiser coming up. Juanita Irizarry and Lori Glenn. They're sort of like kind of know-it-alls. You know, they are know-it-alls in their own way, right? They know, you know, like we talk about the political know-it-alls, Jacob Kaplan and Danny P, the Northwest Side know-it-alls. We had the South Side know-it-alls until one of them he knew everything except how to get to the studio on time. We'll bring him back. I don't hold a grudge like Elizabeth Warren's. He said something mean. I hate him. Bernie Bros. They did something bad 15 years ago. I'll never vote for him again. Democrats. Anyway, Juanita Rosario and Lori Glenn, we in the studio. We're talking all the politics of the day. But before we do any of that, the young man from Alton, the man they call Dr. Doobie, with the news.
How's it going, everyone? Oh, wait, this just in. Elizabeth Warren has tweeted. It says here, Bernie Sanders is a no good son of a. Whoa, hey, oh, hold on. Can't talk about that.
I love Wendell's tweets.
How's it going, everybody? Let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. Our Democratic Illinois governor is no longer a rookie.
And for the record, I love puppies.
Yes, J.B. Pritzker is now into his second year as the governor.
Number two.
Yep, number two, second year. And if we've learned anything from year number one, it's that he loves signing legislation. And my God, does he love hanging out in the city of Chicago and the Thompson Center. Don't expect anything new in 2020. And to our downstate listeners, no, you did not just see J.B. Pritzker pumping gas at your local filling station. Just some portly fella wearing a suit, not J.B. Pritzker. No, today, Governor J.B. Pritzker is in Chicago at the Thompson Center signing legislation. Today, he signed a law accelerating the multi-year senior homestead exemption.
Oh, good. That's good. Get a little break for taxpayers, property taxpayers. Good.
As for our Chicago mayor today, Lori Lightfoot was at the O'Hare International Airport, and I hope TSA got the memo because that comically giant pair of scissors will be going through the airport today. We got a ribbon to cut, baby! She was present for the opening of a new police facility at the O'Hare International Airport. All right. Now we transition into actual news. On Monday, Mayor Lori Lightfoot announced that she is looking to beef up security in the voting booth.
Oh, okay.
Man. Just in time for the Illinois primary, Chicago voters can expect to see updated voting machines that election officials have said will provide more security in the March primary election. Lightfoot is looking to spend roughly $19 million on new touchscreen voting machines. This newfangled 21st century technology will generate a paper ballot that voters will feed into ballot readers when they're done voting.
Well, I like paper ballots. We should go to all paper ballots. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. All paper ballots, says Ben Jarofsky.
Old days, old school. It's better in the old days, right? Maybe it took a little longer, but I had more confidence in the validity of it, so.
The old ballots. Guy wants to go to the old days, guys. Whoa.
Did I tell you about Bewitched?
Please, yeah. Keep these millennial listeners
I going. Like it. Oh, those Republicans.
Under the spending plan, Alderman advanced Monday, the $19 million will be transferred from an already existing $69 million city program.
Uh-oh.
A program once championed by our former mayor, Rahm Emanuel.
Take a chill pill, man.
The Smart Streetlight Program. Ben Jarofsky, your
thoughts. What is smart about a streetlight? Mike, we got to bring Mike Novak back in, and that's our environmental expert. Remember he was going on and on about streetlights, how bright they are? Good friend of mine, Keith, was doing this the other day on Facebook. What up, Keith? He was saying, they're too bright. And my wife was, they're too bright. So that was Mayor Rahm's thing. So now she's taking the money that Mayor Rahm had earmarked for streetlights and spending it on computers. Is that correct?
She's taken 19 out of the already 69 million.
Ah, folks in Chicago, you know, you put the money here, you take it from there, you spend it there, you know, but nobody's really paying attention anyway. You have a clip of ribbon, everyone's happy. I'm very skeptical about this, D. I have actually not seen this particular story because I get my news on the 24-hour cycle from newspapers.
It would really help if you would look online for that news, especially, you know, I don't know, being the host of a podcast. I don't know. That'd probably help.
And then tomorrow be in the newspaper, like yeah. The real thing. And I'll come in, D, man, you see this story? I saw it yesterday on the internet.
Very similar to how on Tuesdays, D, how was your weekend? No one cares anymore.
By the way,
Tuesday.
Did I tell you I saw 1917? Great
yes,
flick.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, so I'm going to have to take a deep dive in this one, folks. Whenever mayors start taking money from pile A and spending it on pile B, I get a little nervous. I did that with the TIF program. Remember the money that was earmarked for a basketball arena and a hotel in the South Loop? Somehow or other got spent on Navy Pier. How about that? Oh, well, you don't care. We already raised your property taxes for this TIF's launch fund, so we're going to spend it over here. Yeah, don't follow the bouncing ball.
All right. And since we're already talking about the March primary elections, hey, listeners, who are you voting for in the primary? Not sure? Well, listen up, because the following primary candidate updates may give you a better clue. First up, a local update involving the 2020 presidential Democratic primary. The following comes from the Chicago Sun-Times and Rachel Hinton. And to all of our completely clueless voters who just show up and vote for the first name they see on the ballot, still not sure if you guys exist, but we have your pick for president in the primary. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar has sealed the first spot on the Illinois primary election ballot.
Yes. Now, this is dedicated to this whole issue of who gets the first position on a ballot or the last position is rooted in the notion that you, the voters, are not bright. Okay? That is what the prevailing view of the people who run the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, actually, both parties, really, Republicans believe this too. They believe you're stupid. They believe you're lazy. They believe you don't pay attention. So you have, there's two things here. One, you'll vote for the first name you see, whether you recognize it. Oh, well, she must be good. She's the first on the ballot. I'll vote for her. Okay? Or you'll vote for the last person you see.
Oh, this is hard. Who's the first person? Thank you. I got to go.
Sort of like me taking the ACT. Oh, God. I'm just going to start poking holes in this
thing.
That
was me taking the ACT.
Get out of here. That's a Chicago voter or an Illinois voter. Any voter, really. I'm just going to. Amy Klobuchar. That looks good. I think I heard of that name. Amy. There's a song called Amy. Amy, I'm in love with you. And so I'll vote for Amy Klobuchar. So they think you're an idiot. That's what they think. The other thing is, this was explained to me. Go, no, Ben, it's not that we think voters are idiots.
Let's hear this spin.
This is the other spin. This is not as bad. It's not that we have such a low regard for them. It's just that if there's more than two names on a ballot, follow me on this one, folks. It's easier for you, the dim-witted voter, to find the name that you want if it's first. So like five names. Oh, God, I'm confused. There's five names. I can't do it. I'll just, it's up there. It's the first name.
Whew. Oh, wait, what did I show up here for again?
They have such a low regard for you people. They think you're idiots and dimwits. And by the way, as I said many times, it's hard for me to argue with it when I look at some of the people you voted for and have elected, okay? So they make a compelling point, especially when I look at the results of the 2015 mayoral race when the people of the city of Chicago thought, I think I'll reelect Mayor Rahm Emanuel, even though he has buried evidence of a murder. So anyway, and he's closed schools and he's insulted people. Oh, I'll vote for him anyway. I'm a Chicago voter. So that's why they have a low opinion of you, because you keep voting for them. Anyway, that's why it's so important, Amy Klobuchar, to have that number one position.
So once again, clueless voters, Amy Klobuchar just did all the work for you. She's the first one on the ballot. Just hit that and you can go home. The rest of the ballot includes former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick.
Yeah, I can't believe he's still running. He was the one who
jumped into the race. At some point, he thought it was a good idea to jump in the race because it looked like Democrats weren't rallying behind anybody, and now he's stuck running. I mean, nobody's talking about Deval Patrick.
No. You know? He's second on the ballot, followed by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, former Vice President Joe Biden, and former mayor of New York, a.k.a. Ben's favorite, Michael Bloomberg. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren follows next, then ex-mayor of South Bend, Indiana, also Ben's favorite, Pete Buttigieg, then hedge fund manager Tom Steyer, followed by entrepreneur Andrew Yang, took the sixth through ninth spots on the ballot. All those people there. Those whose campaigns weren't in line on the first day will round out the bottom of the ballot. That includes Colorado Senator Michael Bennett.
He's still running?
He's still running.
Dang.
Michael Bennett in the 10th spot, followed by former Maryland Rep. John Delaney.
He's still running?
He's still running.
Oh, my goodness.
And Tulsi Gabbard. Oh, yeah, and Cory Booker dropped out of the race on
CB,
Monday.
So is he on the ballot? Are they take him off the ballot?
Dropped out of the race.
I thought Tulsi had dropped out. Too. No?
Nope.
Is she still running?
Nope.
I saw Tulsi weigh in. We're going to talk about this with Maya on the great spat between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren's pretty desperate here. She's dredging up this conversation from 2018. But Tulsi Gabbard weighed in. I don't know if you saw that. You see that, D? Tulsi Gabbard weighed in and said that she had had a conversation with Bernie about running for president. She had told, I think Tulsi supported Bernie back in 2016. Did she not, Dennis? I think she did. So she felt compelled to talk to him about her candidacy, even though she had supported him in 2016. She was going to run and this time around. And she claims that he was a perfect gentleman about it and just said good luck and never said anything about women can't win. So anyway, you know, Democrats, I love to fight.
All right, so there you are. That's the local news there. We also got some Kim Fox news to talk about as well. Ooh. Let's just get that out of the way now. Kim Fox has cleared the first round of political election hell. She's powered through her petition challenges and will, in fact, be on the March 17th primary ballot. Anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. We talked about this with Jacob Kaplan, the executive director of the Cook County Democratic Party there, of course, supporting Kim Fox. He was very confident, very cocky. Remember, like, oh, she'll make the ballot then. Yeah, no crowd about it. So this is the games people play with getting on the ballot, and you know, the libertarian me says just let everybody run, just have a filing fee to cover expenses. This games we play where we kick people off, we have these crazy rules governing the petitions. They have to have every I has to be dotted and T crossed. This bizarre collection of rules and regulations governing how you're supposed to fill out the petition. If you miss anything, if you trip up, they could knock you off the ballot, throw out your signatures. So I don't know. I think it's a strange way of going about business. I would have been really surprised if Kim Fox had been knocked off. And as you know, Robert Fioretti was the person who challenged her petitions, Bob Fioretti, the former alderman of the second ward. So he obviously was really hoping that if she were knocked off, he would have a chance of winning. Looks like she's going to win re-election, or at least get to the next stage.
So, as of right now, the three main candidates, as you mentioned, Bob Fioretti, former mayoral candidate and candidate for a lot of things, apparently, right? He's ran for a lot of stuff.
He also is a runner.
Oh.
Just in general. I think Bob Fioretti just likes running. Just physically.
I didn't know he was a runner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I just felt like running. I
did not know that. Yeah, he ran. Let's see if I could do this. He ran for Cook County Board President. He ran for alderman. He's the alderman of the second ward. He ran for mayor. I think he's run for mayor twice. Am I correct on that, Maya? And now he's running for state's attorney. Did I forget anything? Cook County Board President, Mayor twice, that's three, and now State's Attorney four. I think four different things since he's been alderman. So he likes to run.
Mm-hmm. Has he won any of them?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, he was the alderman of the second ward. And I always say this when I mention Bob Fioretti. I appreciate him because he gave me some inside information once about the TIF program that was very helpful to me. So don't say anything bad about Bob Fioretti.
All right, I won't. He can now focus on the race between him and Kim Fox. And also, let us not forget, our new candidate and my favorite guilty pleasure of 2020, Bill the Bro Conway. He's a bro.
Bill the Bro. I'm going to ask Maya to weigh in on this, the difference between a bro and a hipster. I was very confused about that.
We'll keep you posted on these stories as today's program rolls along. Don't go anywhere, because as you see, live streamers, Maya Dukmasova is here, and we are ready to talk all things local, national, all things politics. It's the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters. Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
How did you go from sharing stories over the years to deciding to write a book?
Good question, Mayor. Good question.
Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show.
I love that you have audio of this.
Live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Dennis is really good at his job, ladies and gentlemen. That is a clip from an interview that Mayor Lori Lightfoot conducted with Hillary Clinton.
How did you go from sharing stories over the years to deciding to write a book?
Good question, Mayor. Good question.
Was it? Good question. That
entire event was so excruciating. It was so bad.
We talked about it. It was a great Maya riff. There's some great Maya riffs comes in this show, and she just riffs. She's got ready one about Iran and government lying. We'll get into that one. Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and the Democrats and how they love to have fights over stupid things. We'll get into that one. Bros versus hipsters. She has some passionate feelings about that one. But we have to promote something. What are we going to promote right now?
We're going to promote our February show at the Hideout. So, folks, I know you've been just waiting with bated breath because we had to cancel the January show because the Hideout had to do some repairs in their bar. So the February show will be on February 2nd, first Tuesday. No, 2nd
or 3rd?
I think
it's the 4th.
4th?
Yeah, it's the first Tuesday of the month.
Everybody look at the 4th. So yeah. February 4th, first Tuesday of February, we're going to have Brandon Johnson, Cook County Commissioner, and Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa joining us on the show to talk about Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Carlos Rosa is a delegate for Bernie Sanders for the state of Illinois, and Brandon Johnson is a delegate for Elizabeth Warren. So they both feel passionately about their candidates of choice for this presidential election, and we're gonna sort of as proxies for these campaigns, we're gonna grill them about various positions and really try to get a sense of where the common ground and where the serious disagreements are. I mean, I personally, my biggest question for these camps is, you know, what would be the harm in joining forces? I've still not heard a really good argument about what these candidates would have to lose if they joined forces. And it always feels a little bit just overextended and strained and a reach. When differences between these campaigns are articulated, the things that they claim to be, in the ways in which they claim to be so different from one another, I don't know. There just seems to be so much more in common than there is than there is of a difference. And I mean, this is a good segue into what's this news that came out today about allegedly Bernie saying that a woman can't be president in 2020. This is the Elizabeth Warren's campaign has put this out there that they had a meeting where he said this at some.
They had a conversation in 2018, and where presumably Elizabeth Warren was letting Bernie Sanders know that she was running and asking him whether he was going to run again. That kind of conversation that candidates have, they're known to have that, and try to figure. And Elizabeth Warren is alleging that during that conversation, Bernie Sanders told her that the people of this country will not elect a woman as president. And Elizabeth Warren's people have put that out there as an accusation to show what? What are they trying to show with that accusation?
Well, it's like to cast aspersions on Bernie Sanders and to make him look bad. This is like a, you know, just like a kind of a, I mean, I'm not saying there's anything that it's good that he said this or that he's right or whatever if he did say it, but it's just like bringing this up is not like it's an attempt to discredit his campaign, I suppose, but I don't know. It's just kind of sad to me because this is not what's going to get either of them elected. Like, it's not going to hurt him so significantly that he'll lose that, you know, some people would take the statement and say, oh, he hates women or whatever, which I think that I would have imagined that the statement was probably a more pragmatic observation. I mean,
if he made it at all.
If he made it at all, right. Like, I mean, there must be some, he probably had some reasoning for why he thinks that a woman can't win in 2020. On the other hand, like, it can very well backfire with Elizabeth Warren's people for putting this out there in a way, you know, to try to cast aspersions on him, but in a kind of very tenuous way. It's sad that this is what it's coming down to. Because apparently she was fine with it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Whatever that conversation was, yeah, I mean, it didn't bother her that much. Yeah. And I have not had a sense that they had a kind of gendered animosity in between them. Yeah, you know,
I feel like we were on the high road and now we just kind
of
hit the low road.
And it's like, what,
we
you know, in the meantime, like, this isn't helping either of them.
Well, and in defense of Elizabeth Warren, I don't even know if what I'm about to say is a defense of Elizabeth Warren. In the tit for tat that's going on in Iowa right now between these two campaigns, this began where Bernie Sanders supporters had these talking points. Which is funny. If you ever worked on a campaign, they give you talking points because, again, the estimation of the voter is so low and the estimation of the person, even the supporter, is so low that they're so concerned. If you deviate, that, you know what I mean, their talking point for one moment, you'll lose everything. So they had this talking point where they were bashing Elizabeth Warren, saying she was the candidate of the elites. And so when that emerged as in the middle of Iowa, the Warren people were outraged. Bernie Sanders said, I knew nothing about it. That started this fight. And that's when Elizabeth Warren came back and said, oh, you know, we had this conversation 2 years ago. So in other words, they're like,
yeah,
getting
it's
petty.
Also just like, it's so stupid. Candidate of the elites. What candidate isn't the candidate of the elites? I mean, even populists are like, what does that mean? The candidate of the elites, the elites like them? The elites always like, there's always elites liking all of the candidates, you know, there were elites that were all about Donald Trump, too. I mean, like, you know, it's the whole myth that this was like some big working class uprising that got Donald Trump elected. The money and the campaign and all of that stuff ran on, you know, people, bros, to your point. You know, there were all kinds of college educated bros and white women, college educated white women. Got Donald Trump elected. So I don't know what that means, that she's a candidate of the elites. I don't know. Maybe that's supposed to be persuasive.
My guess is.
It's a kind of elitist to think that this would be a persuasive argument to people in Iowa. Just assuming that the people were going to have some kind of knee-jerk reaction to that. I don't know.
Well, I assume that every campaign, I do not know this for a fact, but I assume that every campaign has done its focus group research, and they've come away from those focus groups with some general themes that if they promote will benefit them, either benefit them by promoting themselves in a certain, accentuating a certain positive thing that people have, let's say, about Bernie Sanders, or the counter, help their campaign by undercutting the other candidate by accentuating negative points that the focus group has said about him.
Yeah.
So my guess is that both the Sanders campaign and the Elizabeth Warren campaign have done this. And
they really should be focusing on Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg. Their whole entire messaging and undercutting tactics should be aimed there. That's their real opponents.
Elaborate on
that. Well, I mean, like, look, like, what these candidates have more in common than they do having a difference. And it doesn't benefit their wing of the Democratic Party for them to be, you know, squabbling. Meanwhile, I mean, people are just like swooning over Pete Buttigieg, who isn't a progressive, who's definitely he's definitely a candidate of the elites, if there ever was one, just as much as Joe Biden is, maybe more so even. And like, what, like, it, I don't know. I feel like in the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, like, it should be seen as a strength that there are two candidates who are espousing so many progressive policy ideas and kind of visions. And it's just sad to see them be wasting their energy on bashing one another, you know, or casting aspersions on one another rather than focusing on people who really have meaningful differences with them and whose policies would be, you know, meaningfully at odds with what Liz Warren and Bernie Sanders' visions for the country are.
Well, tonight there'll be a debate in Iowa, and we'll be talking about it at length tomorrow. Samina Mustafa will be in the studio to discuss it. Jackie Algie will be in the studio to discuss it as well. All along, there have been predictions that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are going to go at each other. These are past debates, Maya. My guess is, and all along, they proved those predictions wrong by they've stood in alliance with each other following your suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
They've supported one another. Like if one said the other thing, they say, I'm with Bernie on this or I'm with Elizabeth on that. So they've
been rowing together.
They've been rowing together. It looks like tonight they're going to be hitting each other over the head with the oars.
Mm.
So that's my guess. But I was wrong the last time. I predicted they were going to go at it a couple debates ago. So we'll see about tonight.
Yeah.
If they decide, you know, like their strategists say, look, Elizabeth, if you want to win this Iowa caucus, you got to damage Bernie because his voters are potentially your voters. Personally, I believe that just hurts both campaigns.
Yeah. They need to be getting voters out.
Yes.
But from what I hear, Bernie's ground game in Iowa has been really good. That they're really focused on canvassing and voter registration. I mean, like get voter outreach and get out the vote efforts.
All right. Anyway, so we'll have more talk about this as tomorrow's show, and we'll be hyping this event February 4th at the Hideout, first Tuesday. Carlos Ramirez Rosa representing the Bernie Sanders view, and Brandon Johnson representing Elizabeth Warren. Should be a lot of fun. And
an embarrassment of riches for progressive politics.
Yes. And that night, two very smart progressive politicians who are quick on their feet. It should be a lot of fun.
I hope there's a lot of lakefront liberals there just fuming. Fuming. Pete Buttigieg fans just foaming at the mouth.
And I was thinking we should get like Ben like a referee shirt and like a whistle or something.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on, guys.
Hey, Al.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I was at a restaurant yesterday actually discussing Iran with an Iranian friend of mine. And there was next to us, there was this couple. I don't know if they were friends or a couple or what. But at one point I overheard the man saying these people were like, your generation, Ben, they're like boomers. And the guy was like, oh, Pete Buttigieg, that guy is so smart. That guy is so smart. He's only 38 years old. He's so smart. And I was just like, God, like, it was just so frustrating to listen to this guy wax poetic and saying nothing other than that, oh, he's so smart. This is the ad. This guy's very smart.
Maya.
And my friend later said to me, I should have turned around and said, did you know his dad is a Marxist?
That is correct.
Yeah.
And that would have flipped up.
People knew.
Is he still a Marxist?
I mean,
I don't know.
Listen, we haven't heard a word out of him.
Yeah.
One of the country's premier Gramsci scholars. Yeah. I would be shocked if he's not a Marxist anymore.
I have to say this about my beloved boomers. And I am a proud card-carrying member of the Boomers. So they're really mad at me right now about Patti Smith. That's a whole other story, which I won't go into at the moment. But
they love that Bewitched talker.
Yeah,
though. That was great.
Have you ever heard of Bewitched? It's a TV. It was a TV.
I used to watch Bewitched when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, Nick at Night.
This guy acts like he never watched. He loves Bewitched. He's got a Bewitched tattoo, don't you?
I'm more of a New Darren guy.
Two Darrens.
Yeah.
That's how much he knows it. Anyway, all right, I'm not going to redo the Bewitched thing. But I made this observation more than once that my guess is that a good chunk of Pete Buttigieg support are boomers.
Yeah.
And they just like the guy because Another old TV reference. It's like Eddie Haskell. This is another old TV reference.
Not too scary. It seems kind of progressive, but nothing that's too new.
No, but
you know,
old people of the older persuasion love it when young people are nice to them. You know what I'm saying?
People of the older persuasion.
I like him. He's such a nice young man, and that's like boomers with Pete Buttigieg. He's such a nice young man.
That's exactly this conversation I was overhearing. That was exactly the flavor of it.
Come on, boomers, you're smarter than that. All right? Yeah. God damn it.
I mean, were you protesting the Vietnam War to now like be to folding over for a political candidate so that, you know, that just seems nice? It seems properly credentialed.
Don't get me started on boomers who protested the Vietnam War.
And then voted for Reagan.
Their neck was on the line because they were facing a draft. Once the draft was over, I believe in social conservatism. And then became Reagan supporters. Unbelievable.
And now they're voting for Mayor Pete.
Well, no, they probably, well, or Donald John Trump. Anyway, I'm very jaded about my fellow baby boomers. They've really let me down. People of the older persuasion. All right. You had some really compelling points we were making on the phone today. We're doing our weekly pre-show chat, and Maya was fired up, and I was fired up as well. And we've talked a lot on the show about Donald Trump's, this last week, we were talking a lot about Donald Trump's strategy, if there is such a thing, or toward Iran. What is his end game? He had the second most powerful leader in the Iranian government executed by a drone strike about 10 days ago, unleashed all these war of words between the two countries. And then in the aftermath, the Iranians shot down a Ukrainian airplane, killing all the people aboard. It's just like a bewildering array of news coming from that area of the world. Most people in this country have a hard time just keeping track of who's running for alderman in their ward. It's really hard for Americans to keep track of on foreign policy. That's why they're so easily manipulated, in my humble opinion, by their government. But there's so many issues that arise from this, not the least of which it's so obvious that both governments are just so willingly and free, Maya, to just brazenly lie about, like, the Iranians lying about shooting down the airplane.
Yeah.
Remember, they wouldn't even admit, it took like 3 days or 4 days, whatever it was, before they finally fessed up that, yes, the airplane was shot down.
Yeah.
And instead they said it was malfunction. They were trying to blame it on Trump. Trump's been lying all along about having reasons for having killed the Iranian general, making up these threats to American embassies, and then his representatives have to go on the Sunday news show and face questions from reporters, who, and it becomes really clear that there is no evidence. Government's lying all the time on both sides, and I just feel bad, really particularly bad. Well, the Iranian people, the people in Iran, have to are facing on the front lines, facing the consequences.
But you know what? People in Iran, it's from what I hear, this is again coming from the conversation I was having with my Iranian friend yesterday, who's like very much following all of these developments. It's like, it seems like the wool is really pulled over the eyes of Americans much more effectively than the people in Iran, because the government in Iran has been undergoing a legitimacy crisis for an extended period of time now. I mean, there were protests against the government going on before the death of the general, pretty much, you know, continuously for months now, right? Mm-hmm. There was the internet blackout, there were electricity outages, and I mean, we'd been here. That was the news coming out of Iran at the time, and people over there are used to their government lying, because this, like, the whole thing is like set. The machinery is such that just immediately the government lies about whatever it is that's going on. And what my friend was explaining to me was that, like, the killing of this general was just like this tremendous, like, gift to this Iranian government that's going, you know, experiencing a crisis of legitimacy. Now they finally have, like, something to kind of use for their advantage. You know, they have
gifting
this
quote,
right? Well, gift, yeah, in the sense that now, you know, the people are mobilized. This is like a big national tragedy. The government has some breathing room from these protests. You have, like, you know, patriotic sentiments welling up and blah blah blah. And then they go and they shoot down this plane. Like, I mean, which is basically a screw up. This was like they screwed up and lied about it immediately, which now, I mean, people now are extremely mad about this because the plane was full of Iranians, even though there's Canadian nationals and American nationals and, you know, some Ukrainians too. But it was a plane full of their own people. So people are pissed about that, and they're mad at the government now. And so the way my friend put it, it's like the Iranian government had never climbed so high in terms of, like, having an ace in their hand of, like, something as that can be used so effectively for their purposes than, like, the death of this general, the killing of this general. Like, they had never ascended to a level of, like, something that big that they could use for their kind of purposes and their political, reviving their political legitimacy and all of that. And it's like they lost it. They screwed it up, like, royally for their own propaganda kind of purposes on domestically. So and he said it's quite sad that at the end of the day they had to confess about the lie, because I mean, he thinks that it's really because of the pressure from the Canadians and the Americans, and probably most from Justin Trudeau. So that was, like, really the most important pressure point. Once again, like, Iran is in a position where something that's, like, sort of positive in that the government is being forced to say the truth about what happened is happening at the behest of, like, foreign intervention, essentially, which is, like, you know, the whole tragic saga of the last, like, 60 years is, like, things happening domestically that are as a result of foreign intervention. So, yeah, it just seems like a really the whole thing is, like, tragic in so many ways. But what I will say is that it seems that from how my friend was describing the situation is that people have not, I mean, The government over there is continuing to undergo a crisis of legitimacy, and that people are not getting hoodwinked. Like, now the death of the general has receded into the background for a lot of people because of this, like, horrendous, like, you know, the death of so many just regular civilians, like Iranian people, for the sake of this conflict. So I don't know. Meanwhile, over here, you know.
No, meanwhile, okay.
People still think the government isn't lying to them.
Well, I don't know about that. You said something and I wrote it down. People over there are used to their government lying.
In most places, people are used to their government's lying.
Yes. I would say there's a sizable number of people in this country who just automatically assume that their government is lying.
Yeah.
And I try not to fall victim to that. But it's really hard not to, because we spend so much of our time, Maya, like, sort of, like, digging at, like, something will happen in the world. And then there's this instinctive knee-jerk reaction that leaders have or their publicists have to, like, put the spin on it so that they don't get blamed. And they almost want rather than the truth to come out, they'd rather just have the matter recede. You get what I'm saying? I mean, we saw this happen, so much you talked about so much, like, locally with Kim Fox and Smollett Gate, and how she handled that. It happens all the time. When something embarrassing happens to an elected official, there's this instinctive knee-jerk reaction to put a positive spin on it, to see if they can divert attention to somebody else, blame somebody else, shift the blame to somebody else. And reporters spend so much of their time then digging through the rubble of all the spin. We saw this with the Quan McDonald video. Like, did we believe the official explanation of the mayor of the city of Chicago that he held back on releasing the Laquan McDonald video? First of all, that he didn't watch the Laquan McDonald video. Mm-hmm. Or did he hold back on it? He held back on it because what? He wanted the investigation to proceed. Did you believe that? Do people in the city of Chicago believe that? Do they believe what their officials tell them? I think we have a huge credibility problem in this country as well as in Iran.
I think, well, yeah, but I think that the difference is that here, you don't have to just kind of be in this. You can actually find out the mechanics of the lie. Like, you, like, perfect example is this thing about this rape cover up in Champaign. Like, the, here, there's a possibility to obtain the email that retains, that makes the reference, right? And now we're watching in unfold in front of our eyes the people scrambling to try to make up something to cover, to like, just to cover their behinds on this, you know? So the thing that's crazy is that you can watch this a million times, like this, every day across states and municipalities all over this country, this kind of thing is going down, and still people are then, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes election time, it's like, who can give them the best commercial? Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
You know? They're like...
Yeah.
Or Mayor Rahm. Yeah. All, you know, it's all the same ilk. Well, nice marketing.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about Maya's making reference to the story that broke last week. WBEZ uncovered an email that was sent by Michael McCain, an ally to House Speaker Michael Madigan. We talked a lot about this last week. We had Dan Mahopoulos from WBEZ on talking about it. But in this email, it's such a convoluted, complicated story. But in this email, Michael McCain was advocating to two former high-ranking aides to Governor Pat Quinn. There's so many names in this story, Amaya. When you unpack it, you just have all these. I did this for the Reader. I had to write this thing for the Reader about this story. And I realized there are all these names. I'm listing the names. Anyway, so this email was written by McCain to Pat Quinn's former high-ranking aides to Pat Quinn, advocating leniency on behalf of a gentleman who had done something wrong and was being punished or about to be punished. And he said he helped us with the rape in Champaign. And that just, this was an email that was written 8 years ago. It's suddenly the reporters, Dave McKinney from WBZ, stumbles upon it. Like, what rape in Champaign? How did he help you with that rape in Champaign? And now, now everybody's trying to figure. Nobody quite knows what the rape in Champaign alludes to. Everybody's trying to figure it out, and it doesn't help that there's this. People don't really believe what the government says anyway.
Right, but I mean, I think that. This kind of what we're talking about, a lot of people then just become kind of cynical and think that there's no point in participating in the process. But it's exactly the lack of participation that allows us to go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not making anything better to not vote, to not try to inform yourself as a voter, to do some research beyond what's being reported and on cable news and whatever. You can make a more informed decision about things, but even more importantly, you know, we need access to the ballot box, and there's all kinds of things that are happening. People these shadowy people on these emails who are not household names, who aren't the face of the face of these parties. There's all kinds of efforts. There's all kinds of gerrymandering that happens that is designed to keep people from having easy access. And if they still care about that, it must still matter that people vote, you know? So I don't know, after these kinds of spiels, I always feel is that just going to, you know, leave people feeling cynical or whatever? And that's not my suggestion, that it's pointless to do anything about it. The point is that we are still blessed to be living in a place that has a Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
Where you can get these emails. And then if you sit there and say, well, it's there's no point in participating in the process, well, then one day they're going to curtail the FOIA laws, and then we won't even know what's happening. So...
No, I'm with you on that.
You still got to vote and go out and register people to vote. Help your elderly neighbors and your young people get to the polling places. Yeah.
I'm with you 100%. You're preaching to the choir, Maya. I make fun of myself all the time because I stay loyal in a general sense to the Democratic Party. Even though the Democratic Party in many instances lets me down. So in this particular instance, this gentleman, Michael McClain, was operating in the shadows of government. Who knows how much power he had, how much authority he's had. I've had several off-the-record conversations subsequently from people who tell me, oh, yeah, I had a deal with McClane. In other words, he had power, he had authority, and he was acting like his emissary. There was a movie that came out a few years ago, Michael Clayton, starring George Clooney, and he's been promoted. People have told me he's kind of like a Michael Clayton character. You know, this guy just operates on the fringes and the shadows. It's a good movie, by the way, if you ever saw it. So, you know, it is easy to get jaded and skeptical. And then when you see emails like this emerge where deals are being made behind that you don't know about, and supposedly there's a chance that something like a sacrosanct is a rape victim being, what, the story being buried, perhaps because of political purposes, just kind of undercuts, just put it mildly, whatever integrity the Democrats have, whatever validity they have. And yet I still persist. Do you follow me on this one, Maya? I still persist. I still generally support the Democrat. But I guess you have to have some kind of faith in the system.
I mean, ultimately. I'm sure that if somebody wanted to dig through this guy McClane has been involved with like tons of lobbying efforts to get some kind of positive legislation passed. I mean, this guy wasn't pushing ALEC stuff in the state house, you know? So it's just like whatever kind of corruption and bad dealing is going on, that stuff I feel like is pretty, you know, party neutral. Like it could have been Republicans doing the same thing. You think Bruce Rauner's administration doesn't have any skeletons in his closet?
Oh, Dennis.
I just said Bruce Rauner, Dennis.
Hey, did someone say Bruce Rauner?
Yeah.
Yay for our teachers. Yay for our teachers.
But I mean, like, I guess it seems like your loyalty has more to do with the fact that, like, of the general things that get accomplished when your people are in at the wheel.
My loyalty to the Democratic Party is very strange, but it's deep. And it's no doubt I'm obsessed with who the Democrats nominate. I follow it very closely. We talk about it on the show all the time. We're going to break down I'll be watching the debate tonight. We'll be breaking it down tomorrow. It's almost as like, even though I should know better, Maya, I never quite lose that faith and idealism. I just put it into the next campaign. I've been spending a lot of time in the show talking about how, when I look back, how disappointed I am so much with how Barack Obama was running the country. But in 2008, I was so happy. Tears of joy when Obama was
elected. I remember that. I was in upstate New York and people were losing it over there.
Yeah.
I remember I was with like some colleagues. I was like an intern at a communications office at my university. And like I was like out at a bar with some like people who were like staffers there. Like, of the older persuasion. These people, actually, some of them had been from Chicago, and they were like, they had tears in their eyes. Yeah. They were just like wrapped. And I think a lot of people felt that way. I mean, the people on campus were wrapped. I mean, it was just generally a very exciting moment.
We should have kept his feet to the fire. Now I realize too many tears in the eyes and not enough pragmatism. All right. Maya Dukmasova, thank you so much. Jennifer Welch is on deck. And you will be, I know we don't want to confuse people, but you will be running a forum tonight.
Yeah, tonight speaking of civic engagement, the clerk of the Circuit Court of Cook County, for the first time in 20 years, we're going to have a new clerk. So the current clerk, Dorothy Brown, whose job it is to, you know, keep track of like millions of boxes of old case files, to keep the electronics record system running, to manage everything that has to do with paperwork related to the court system. And our court system is the largest unified court system in the country, some say even in the world.
Did you say millions or billions?
Millions of boxes.
Oh, I thought you said billions.
No.
Yes, that's billion with a B.
He's funny, that is.
Yeah, so she's not running for re-election, perhaps because just the heat is too strong from the feds who are still alleging and investigating the job selling situation in this office. So now there's four candidates running. We've got Richard Boykin, the former commissioner who was replaced by Brandon Johnson, former Cook County commissioner.
Defeated by Brandon Johnson.
Yeah, big fan of privatization and selling off public debt, which is very much an issue in the clerk's office. There's State Senator Iris Martinez, who the people I've talked to in the know are, you know, don't take it too seriously that she's running. She's not raising much money. It's just kind of strange why she's going for this, probably just to raise her profile. There is Jacob Meister, who is a candidate. He's like a Fritz Kagi type in this whole story. He's like an independent attorney who's running as a progressive, who like works in the court system and sort of taking the approach of like, I know the real problems. And the last person is who was it? Boykin, Martinez. Oh, Kabunarji, Michael Kabunarji, who's on the Board of Review. So he's the Democratic Party's pick for this seat. Not clear at all why he would be a better candidate than, say, Boykin or Martinez. The Board of Review is an office that employs something like 100 people. The clerk's office employs like 1,400 people. Mm-hmm. It's a big change. The Board of Review does not engage in the kind of work that the clerk's office does. An additional challenge for all these candidates is that they'd be taken over in an office filled with employees who a lot of them got there through patronage kind of hiring. So there's challenges on the technical end, on the staffing end. And so the forum tonight is hopefully going to shed some light on how these folks are going to try to approach these problems.
All right. Very good. Maya, thank you so much. Every Tuesday on the show, Maya comes in. We talk politics. Jennifer Welsh is on deck. We're going to bring her on when we return. Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffemanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel. Woo! Did you know that 40% of the people in Illinois opt to be cremated? Well, it's true. And Chicagoland Cremation Options honors their wishes by providing cremation services directly to the general public. Chicagoland Cremation Options provides an affordable, ethical, and easy cremation arrangement, whether in person or online. Save thousands and streamline the process by going directly to Chicagoland Cremation Options. It's a family-owned business operated by my good friend, Douglas Klein. Here's how you reach them. Chicagoland Cremation Options.com. One more time. Chicago LandCremationOptions.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.